Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Classic FM. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, country, rock and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's musical trivia questions come to us from Parade Magazine on the 22nd of May, 2023. Question number one, which classical music composer was deaf? Was that A, Tchaikovsky, B, Beethoven, C, Wagner, or D, Chopin? Deaf composer? Who was that anyway? And question number two, Frank Sinatra changed the lyrics of The Lady is a Tramp to what? Was it A, The Lady is a Witch, B, The Lady is a Thief, C, The Lady is a Champ, or D, The Lady is a Crank? How did Sinatra change those lyrics anyway? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from the website onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of October 27th. Well, it was on this very day, back in 1956, that Elvis Presley's song Love Me Tender became the number one Billboard pop hit. He became the first artist to follow himself into the number one position. The song Don't Be Cruel, Hound Dog, had been number one song for 11 weeks. Love Me Tender, recorded today, 1956. And it was 66 years ago today, 1957, that Bobby Helms recorded Jingle Bell Rock, one of the first rock Christmas tunes, today in 1957. And in classical transitions music news, and given that Paganini's birthday is today, we have this article entitled, Niccolo Paganini was such a gifted violinist, people thought he sold his soul to the devil. This is published on 27 October 2022 in ClassicFM.com by Maddie Shaw Roberts. Some thought he was a metaphorical musical god. Others thought he literally got his virtuosity from a deal with the devil. But what was the real story behind Niccolo Paganini's genius? Born on 27 October 1782 in Genoa, Italy, Niccolo Paganini was an incredibly gifted musician and is widely considered one of the greatest violinists of all time. He started playing the mandolin, age 5, before taking up the violin, age 7, and giving his first public performance, aged 11, in Genoa. At the age of just 15, the talented teenager started playing solo tours. The 19th century produced a number of extraordinary violinists, but none like Paganini. His talent was so beyond that of his peers that people started to believe he had made a pact with the devil. It was even rumored that Paganini's mother had sold his soul to the devil so he could become the greatest virtuoso in history. Now, here's the real story. Age 13, Paganini was sent to study with famous violinist and teacher Alessandro Rolla. Rolla quickly saw Paganini's talent and decided there was nothing else he could teach him, so he passed him on to his own teacher, Ferdinando Peer, who later referred him to his teacher, Gasparo Giretti. The young Paganini was clearly a child prodigy. But when 15-year-old Paganini embarked on solo tours, he had a breakdown and turned to alcoholism. The violinist's fame slowly turned him into a heavy gambler, drinker, and a serial womanizer. A rumor even spread that Paganini had murdered a woman, used her intestines as violin strings, and imprisoned her soul within the instrument. Women's screams were said to be heard from his violin when he performed on stage. One thing was for sure, Paganini's skill on the violin was unparalleled. He was one of the first solo violinists to perform publicly without sheet music, choosing instead to memorize everything. Known particularly for his fiendish 24 caprices for solo violin, Paganini helped popularize certain string techniques such as bow bounces, spiccato, as well as left-hand pizzicato and harmonics. He also purposely mistuned strings to make certain pieces easier to play. It is said he could play 12 notes per second, a feat later achieved by violinist David Garrett, who plays Paganini in The Devil's Violinist, a 2013 film based on the composer's life story. The Devil Incarnate? Paganini was a striking man with hollow cheeks, pale skin, and thin lips. He was very tall and thin, often dressed in black. He also had very long, thin fingers, and without the restriction of performing with sheet music, he flailed about on stage, earning him the nickname Rubber Man. It is now believed that Paganini's unusual finger length, which allowed him to play three octaves in one handspan, was due to a genetic disorder. Equally, his ability to play at incredible speed could be attributed to another disorder, which causes increased flexibility and a lack of coordination. The violin was also regarded by some as the devil's instrument, so all in all, it's not surprising that rumors about a deal with the devil started circulating. Some even thought Paganini could be the devil himself. One of the first rumors came out of a concert in Vienna, where one audience member said they thought they had seen the devil helping Paganini play. People soon began claiming to have doppelgangers of Paganini with horns and hooves. It was even said that the devil once made lightning strike the end of Paganini's bow during a performance. So how did Paganini die? Well, he died of larynx cancer in 27 May 1840 in Nice, France. Before his death, he turned away a priest offering him last rites, the final prayers Catholics receive at the end of their lives. Paganini said he turned the priest away was because he thought he wasn't going to die. But those who believed he was in league with the devil didn't buy that explanation. A week later, Paganini died without receiving last rites, and his local church refused to bury his body on consecrated ground, even though he was a member of the Order of the Golden Spur. Over the next 4 years, his corpse would be transported on an extraordinary tour of Europe. His embalmed body was left on his deathbed in Nice for 2 months before it was transferred to the cellar of the house, where it remained for over a year. After his local church refused to bury him, his body was later taken to an abandoned leper house before being moved to a cement vat in an olive oil factory and later to a private house near Nice. Almost 4 years after his death, Pope Gregory the 16th allowed the violinist's body to be transported to Genoa, and he was finally laid to rest in a cemetery in Parma, Italy, some 200 kilometers from his birthplace in Genoa. And in classical music news, we have this article titled, How to Find Classical Music You Actually Like. This is written by Nick Douglas, and it's published in lifehacker.com on the 18th of September, 2023. Classical music has been evolving for centuries, so there are all different kinds of sounds. That means that if you hate one kind, you can still love several other kinds. Hate opera? You still might love the orchestra. Symphonies too overwhelming? Try some shorter, spare chamber music. The author, Nick Douglas-like, provides a video that gives some tips for finding the kind of classical music you like, according to style, era, instrumentation, and composer. And he concentrates on the Romantic period. If you don't care for that, watch our videos focusing on the Baroque and Classical periods. When in doubt, start with the greats. But remember that composers such as Beethoven and Mozart have a wide variety among their own work. Mozart composed operas, symphonies, dances, marches, chamber music, solo piano pieces, and church music, including his famous haunting Requiem. So if you don't like one Mozart piece, just try one that sounds very different. You don't have to like all classical music in order to seriously appreciate certain forms, composers, and pieces. The more you pay attention to the differences between these types, the more you'll understand your taste as more than just quote-unquote classical, and the easier it will be to find more. Another great way to start it is with Lifehacker's Spotify playlist of introductory classical music, which includes a wide range of recognizable music. Skip through until something catches your ear, then look for more from that composer or type of piece. You can even build your own playlist or just the classical pieces you love and see what Spotify suggests at the bottom under quote-unquote recommended songs. Beethoven would be jealous. And in music research and technology, we have this article titled, The Search for the Perfect Sound. Vinyl is booming in the digital age, so why does the best way to listen feel just out of reach? This is written by Jeff Eggers on the 29th of September, 2022, in WashingtonPost.com. Tom Port is a 68-year-old man who spends his day in an office park outside Los Angeles, where he takes it upon himself to determine which records are the best sounding in the world. This is a task for which he considers himself uniquely qualified. Port is a true audio iconoclast. He delights in telling you that the slab of vinyl you're listening to isn't worthy of his ears, and the only thing more pathetic is the audio setup you're listening to it on. Port developed his self-proclaimed skills over decades of scouring used LP bins, gathering up multiple copies of the same album, and comparing them side by side, listening sessions he calls shootouts. That's what I'm here today to observe. It's just one stop on my year-long search for the perfect sound, an attempt to take a lifelong passion for music and find out if I've really been hearing it. The number of copies of Sgt. Pepper I've played or Dark Side of the Moon are well over 100, maybe close to 200, to find the ones that are really good, Port says. I want the best, and that's exactly what should be driving you. You get this very special record. You may have only five of them in your whole collection, but those five are like a drug. They're just so beyond anything you've ever heard, and you just can't believe it. Port believes that records are like snowflakes. No two are the same. So many things can impact the pressing, including room temperature, The split second the stampers are pressed onto the hot vinyl biscuit, and unknown factors no human can understand. You can't find the best-sounding record by reading the marketing sticker proclaiming the latest advances in audio technology. The only way is to use your ears. So Port and his staff at Better Records sit for hours in a windowless room, unplug the small refrigerator in the back so as not to get any electrical interference, and simply listen. The article skips down and ends with a question. Could digital technology have advanced enough to fool even the best of ears? Well, a trio of acclaimed mastering engineers, Bernie Grundman, Kevin Gray, and Ryan K. Smith, told me that an all-analog chain always sounds better than an album with a digital step. But that didn't seem to settle the debate. It also brought back an exchange I'd had earlier in the summer with Grammy-winning producer T-Bone Burnett. He had spent years working with scientists to create a special record that would capture a recording session in a way a normal LP couldn't, using materials primarily found in space stations. He recruited Bob Dylan to record his first iconic composition, Blowing in the Wind. Burnett made only one copy of the record. It would be auctioned by Christie's only weeks after we met in New York for $1.78 million. After Burnett played me the song, we talked about the process behind the recording. Burnett told me he captured the session on a restored Nagra tape machine, as well as a digital recorder. When it came time to put the song on the disc, he chose the digital recording as his source. I asked him whether he worried about the analog crowd. He was unrepentant. There was no noise or tape hiss, he said. That's the way we deemed it was best. I don't have to apologize for it. It's a great recording, which may lead to the biggest lesson of my quest. Don't pretend to know everything. And in local music news, we have this article titled, The 2023 MTV VMAs, a delightful 20-hour award show that couldn't resist going twice that long. MTV's Biggest Night captured a lot of pop's best and brightest stars in their element, but you likely forgot about most of them by the show's end. This is written by Andrew Unterberger on the 12th of September, 2023, in Billboard.com. Around 9:30 on Tuesday night, September 12, you might have been ready to declare that the Video Music Awards were back. The awards thus far had been elevated by show-stopping performances from Olivia Rodrigo and Doja Cat. Further star power was provided by winners Taylor Swift and Selena Gomez, performers Cardi B and Megan Thee Stallion, and nominal MC Nicki Minaj. By the time Shakira blazed her way through her performance, the show was feeling fuller and more satisfying than any VMA so far this decade. Unfortunately, there were still 2 hours to go, maybe more like 2.5. Complaining about award show length in 2023 is, of course, about as scintillating as griping about there being too many previews before a movie or too many TV timeouts during a football game. At this point, you should probably just accept it as part of the bargain going in or not even bother in the first place. The reason all of this is even worth moaning about in the first place is because for the first time and the first half, these awards did seem like they were going to be MTV's best in some years. getting Olivia Rodrigo and Doja Cat, two legitimate pop A-listers, within a week of the former releasing a new album and the latter hitting number one on the Billboard Hot 100, was a huge win for the show, and both artists met at the moment with a kind of thoughtful, artful, and unforgettable performances that illustrated why the VMA stage is still a meaningful one. And, of course, nothing makes an event feel like the place to be in 23 like the attendance of Taylor Swift. By the fourth award she picked up for the evening, though, it even got to be a little too much. Taylor, as it started feeling less like an artist in their peak moment of dominance and more like a channel in its peak moment of desperation. So how did you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, which classical music composer was deaf? Was that A, Tchaikovsky, B, Beethoven, C, Wagner, or D, Chopin? Correct answer? That would be Ludwig van Beethoven, answer B. As noted in a 3/4/2016 article by Chris Voss, titled Four Composers and the Music They Never Heard, is there anything more fascinating than hearing the music of a composer who was deaf? Something about that idea of creating something whose purpose is to be heard, but not by you, is fascinating, is beautiful, and in a way, is selfless. Furthermore, knowing of a composer's deafness adds another level to how we listen to music. Below are four examples of composers who lost their hearing and the music they wrote once it was gone. Ludwig van Beethoven, 1770 to 1827, without a doubt the most famous composer to lose his hearing. He started noticing his loss in his late 20s, and by his 30s he was on the verge of suicide. In a letter he wrote to his brothers in 1802, he said, "How could I possibly admit an infirmity in which one sense, which ought to be more perfect in me than others, a sense which I once possessed in the highest perfection, a perfection such as few in my profession enjoy or ever have enjoyed?" Despite a myriad of well-meaning but truthfully hocus-pocus attempts to reverse the hearing loss over the years, Beethoven gradually came to accept that his hearing would leave him entirely. What drove him crazy was that no one could tell him why. This was such a frustration to Beethoven that he went so far as to request an autopsy be performed after his death, hoping the mystery might be solved posthumously. But no luck. To this day, we still do not know why Beethoven went deaf. Speculations run the gamut, of course, from shrunken auditory nerves to syphilis, to definitely not syphilis, to lead poisoning, to genetic inheritance. But the truth? Well, it likely will never be known. One thing is certain, though. When Beethoven composed his greatest symphony, Symphony No. 9, the Chorale, he was completely deaf. The other three composers discussed in this article are Bedřich Smetana, Gabriel Fauré, and Vaughan Williams, about whom the author writes this: "Of these four composers, only one person's hearing loss can be definitively linked to a cause. Without a doubt, Vaughan Williams had World War I to thank for his hearing loss. He joined the Royal Army Medical Corps as a private in 1914, then was commissioned as second lieutenant in the Royal Garrison Artillery, which were responsible for the 60-pounder big guns firing shells towards enemy lines. The prolonged exposure to these massive weapons meant that Vaughan Williams gradually began to lose his hearing. By his death in 1958, he, like Beethoven, Smetana, and Fauré before him, was also completely deaf. And despite the condition of his hearing, Vaughan Williams, too, continued to compose. In fact, he had a bit of unexpected compositional resurgence in his 70s that culminated in his ninth and final symphony in 1957. And while this piece is not nearly as well known as Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, also written in deafness, it is fun to draw comparisons between the two. And the answer to our second question, Frank Sinatra changed the lyrics of The Lady is a Tramp to what? Was it A, The Lady is a Witch, B, The Lady is a Thief, C, The Lady is a Champ, or D, The Lady is a Crank? Correct answer. Answer C, The Lady is a Champ. After noting the uncomfortable change in meaning of the word tramp over the years, the website OldTimeMusic.com provides this additional detail about this song. How does The Lady is a Tramp exemplify Frank Sinatra's style? Well, Frank Sinatra's interpretation of The Lady is a Tramp perfectly embodies his signature style. His smooth, velvety voice and impeccable phrasing enhance the song's playful and sassy undertones, making it a quintessential Sinatra performance. Well, what is the significance of The Lady is a Tramp in Frank Sinatra's repertoire? Well, The Lady is a Tramp holds a special place in Frank Sinatra's extensive catalog of songs. It showcases his ability to effortlessly convey emotion, charm listeners, and deliver a memorable performance that stands the test of time. And finally, is The Lady is a Tramp still relevant today? Well, absolutely. The song's timeless message of embracing individuality and authenticity continues to resonate with audiences of all ages. Its popularity and enduring relevance prove that the lady depicted in the song will always have a place in our hearts. So, let's close out today's program with Sinatra's explanation tune, It Was Just One of Those Things.
It was just one of those things, just one of those crazy flings. One of those bells that now and then rings. Just one of those things.
Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is the language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program, intended for people who are blind and print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. So long. Until next time.
But it was just one of those things. It was just one of those nights.